We are delighted to have Jennifer Wortmann Vaughn here to speak about fairness and intelligibility in machine learning. Jennifer is a senior researcher at Microsoft Research and part of Microsoft's Fairness, Accountability, Transparency, and Ethics group. She is especially interested in the interaction between people and AI and has often studied this interaction in the context of prediction markets and other crowdsourcing systems. She completed her PhD at the University of Pennsylvania in 2009 and subsequently spent a year as a Computing Innovation Fellow at Harvard. She is the recipient of Penn's 2009 Rubinoff Dissertation Award for Innovative Applications of Computer Technology, a National Science Foundation Career Award, and a Presidential Early Career Award for Scientists and Engineers. She is also involved in a variety of efforts to provide support for women in computer science. Most notably, she co-founded the annual Workshop for Women in Machine Learning, which has been held each year since 2006. Please join me in welcoming Jen. Jen.
Thank you so much for the introduction. I'm really excited to be here today talking to all of you. I'm going to be talking about fairness and intelligibility in machine learning, which are topics that have come up a lot over the past couple of days. But I hope that this talk will provide a different and maybe a little bit broader perspective on these issues. So this may sound like a cliche by now, but we're living in the age of AI. Artificial intelligence is everywhere, and that's why we're all gathered in this room today. We're at the point where AI systems can recognize individual people and images and translate speech on the fly. The plot that I'm showing on the right here has registration numbers for NIPS, the top academic conference on machine learning over the year. Last year, the conference sold out with 8,000 participants registered. And this year, we don't have final numbers yet, but the first round of registration sold out in less than 12 minutes. All of this means that there are some amazing opportunities, and it's a really exciting time to work in machine learning. But at the same time, we're seeing that these new opportunities also raise new challenges. And these challenges tend to receive a lot of attention in the media, usually when things go wrong. We're hearing more and more stories about algorithmic bias or algorithmic discrimination. And these high-profile stories have really highlighted how important it is to get AI right and to make sure that our AI systems don't discriminate or further disadvantage already disadvantaged groups. Our CEO at Microsoft, Satya Nadella, takes seriously both the value of AI and also the importance of addressing all of these challenges that come with it. Satya published a great Slate piece in 2016 that outlined his principles of artificial intelligence. And these later evolved into the six principles laid out in The Future Computed. Four core principles of fairness, reliability and safety, privacy and security, and inclusiveness, underpinned by two foundational principles of transparency and accountability. These principles are at the heart of the research that my colleagues and I do within the FATE research group at Microsoft. The four pillars of the FATE group are fairness, accountability, transparency, and ethics. Of course, we're not the only group within Microsoft thinking about these issues. Microsoft's Ether Committee was established in 2016 in order to discuss and recommend programs, policies, procedures, and best practices on issues to do with AI people and society. The Ether Committee now has working groups focused on seven topics, including fairness and bias and intelligibility and explainability. And Microsoft is part of larger efforts, such as the Partnership on AI, which is a multi-stakeholder organization with around 70 companies and other partners involved that's dedicated to studying and promoting best practices in AI. So before I jump into fairness and intelligibility, let me just take a step back for a few minutes and say a few words about what AI and machine learning are. I know that you've been hearing a lot about these topics over the last few days, so I'll keep this short, but I just want to make sure that we're all on the same page here. There are many different ways of defining artificial intelligence, and nobody really agrees on one. But my view is that, roughly speaking, AI is about computers doing things that we would normally think of as intelligent. Now, in some cases, this means mimicking human intelligence, as is the case with computer vision or speech recognition. But in other cases, it might mean performing tasks that humans aren't any good at all. Things like making quick decisions about which link a user visiting a website is going to click on. Machine learning is a subfield of AI that's focused on systems that learn from data and experience, as opposed to being explicitly programmed to behave in some way. Machine learning algorithms search for patterns in data and use these patterns to make predictions about the future. Examples include spam filtering, music recommendation systems, and targeted advertising. Now, a neural network is one specific type of machine learning model. In the 80s and 90s, relatively few people were working on neural networks, and they made up only a small part of the machine learning landscape. These days, this picture has changed a bit. Because of increases in computational power and the availability of huge amounts of data that enable neural networks to perform well, there's a lot more emphasis on them these days. And this is often under the name deep learning, which I'm sure all of you have heard. Deep learning is most often used for tasks like speech and vision, where there's a lot of structure in the data. Finally, I want to mention that machine learning can, loosely speaking, be broken down into three categories. First, in supervised learning, we use labeled data instances, such as medical scans labeled as containing a tumor or not containing a tumor, to learn a general rule mapping inputs to outputs, so mapping a new scan to either tumor or not tumor. In unsupervised learning, the goal is to uncover hidden structure or patterns in the data, perhaps by clustering similar data points together. Finally, in reinforcement learning, the goal is to perform a task, such as driving a vehicle or playing a game in a dynamic environment. And learning takes place over time through trial and error. So now that I've said what machine learning is, I want to spend the next few minutes giving some intuition for why it is that machine learning can be biased or unfair. To do this, it's useful to consider the machine learning pipeline. So a typical machine learning pipeline looks something like what I have here. We start by defining the task or problem that we'd like to solve. We next construct the data set. Data set construction involves selecting a data source, acquiring the data that we want to use, pre-processing the data, and perhaps labeling the data. Third, we define a model. Are we going to use a linear model or a decision tree or a neural network? What's our objective function? Each of these choices is associated with its own set of implicit assumptions. Fourth, we train the model on the data. We next test and validate the model before deploying the model in the real world. And finally, we gather feedback about the performance of the model in practice and use that to improve the system. We'll see that decisions made at every point in this pipeline can introduce bias into a system. So let's start with the definition of the task itself. What problem is it that you're trying to solve? In 2016, a research paper came out by a group in China who were training a face recognition system to predict who is going to commit a crime based on images of people's faces. This is extremely concerning for a whole suite of reasons and could lead to substantial harms for the people who are misclassified. I would argue that this is just not a task that people should be trying to solve with machine learning. It's that simple. But there are more subtle examples too. Consider the problem of gender classification that Joy discussed earlier, so predicting someone's gender from a photo. On the surface, it might be less clear what the harms are here, but there are a couple of potential issues. For example, if a gender classifier only predicts binary gender, it's not going to work on people whose gender is non-binary, and likely won't work well for transgender people either. There are other issues as well, and in this case, it might be worth rethinking the task definition, or at the very least, talking it over with diverse stakeholders who can share their own opinion. Let's move on to data set construction. So there are several different ways that bias can arise at this stage of the pipeline. One is that the data source may reflect societal biases, right? The world has a lot of bias in it, and our data sets reflect the world. This is what happened when Amazon tried to build a machine learning-based recruiting tool. If your data source contains mostly male resumes and you've historically hired mostly men, your machine learning system is going to pick up on this. Linguistic bias is also a problem. Researchers at Princeton found that translating "he is a nurse" and "she is a doctor" into Turkish, a gender-neutral language, and then back into English, yields the stereotypical "she is a nurse" and "he is a doctor." I want to emphasize here that these translations were not explicitly programmed, but were a result of the data that the translation systems were trained on. Loosely speaking, people are more likely to say "she is a nurse" than "he is a nurse," so a translation system that's trained on speech generated by people is going to prefer that translation. And to show that I'm not just picking on Google here, I'll point out that the same thing happens with Microsoft's translator for exactly the same reason. Bias can also arise if data is collected from a skewed source. As one example that we also saw in Joy's talk, if we train a face recognition system on images that are mostly white men, then it will work well for white men, but maybe less well on other populations. Yet another way that bias can arise in data set construction is through the use of human labelers. For example, there's a lot of research out there showing that human biases come into play when people are grading essays. But some states are still using automated essay grading systems that are trained on essays that are graded by humans, treating the human scores as if they're ground truth. Okay, let's move on to the model definition. So, a model is a mathematical abstraction of some part of the world. For example, we might assume that the price of a house is a linear function of the number of bedrooms, the number of bathrooms, and the number of square feet with a little bit of random noise or variation. By its very nature, a model is simpler than the world. And so choosing a model necessarily means making some assumptions. What should be included in the model and what shouldn't? How should we include the things that we do? And sometimes these assumptions privilege some groups over others. Consider predictive policing. A predictive policing system may make predictions about where crimes will be committed based on historic arrest data. One implicit assumption here is that the number of arrests in an area is an accurate measure of the amount of crime. This doesn't take into account that policing practices can be racially biased, or that there may be historic over-policing in less affluent neighborhoods. Moving on to the training process, this is the stage where we optimize the parameters of a model. So the weights W1, W2, and W3 in the example that I showed earlier, based on your training data and whatever optimization criteria you've decided on. There's some good news here. Once you've actually settled on your data set and your model and your objective, the actual training algorithm is probably not going to introduce any additional bias. We see this as a common misconception. You generally don't have a biased algorithm, at least not a biased training algorithm. The problem usually really stems from the data or the model or the objective that you're trying to optimize or any of these other issues that I brought up earlier. The testing phase of the pipeline is your opportunity to check for biases and potential harms. And problems can come into play if you don't have the right metrics in mind here. There are a lot of different fairness metrics out there that are more or less appropriate in different contexts. And there's actually a great tutorial on this from last year's FatStar conference by Arvind Narayanan, who I think was supposed to be here today. So to define these metrics, it's useful to start with the idea of a confusion matrix. Suppose an AI system is making a binary decision, such as whether to reject or hire a candidate. We can take any population that the algorithm is run on, say all the men, and divide them into four groups. The unqualified candidates who are rejected, these are true negatives. The unqualified candidates who are hired, these are the false positives. The qualified candidates who are rejected, the false negatives, and the qualified candidates who are hired, the true positives. Most of the fairness metrics that people discuss can be defined in terms of the number of candidates who fall into each of these buckets. So for example, we could ask, what is the probability that a woman is qualified given that you choose to hire her? What about a man? Predictive parity requires that these probabilities, which can be calculated separately for each group, men and women, by looking at the number of true positives divided by the number of true positives plus the number of false positives, should be almost equal for the two groups. You can think of this metric as assessing a form of calibration of the system. Instead, we could choose to ask, what is the probability of hiring a woman if she is unqualified? What about a man? False positive rate balance requires that these probabilities be just about equal for both groups. And again, we can calculate these probabilities by looking at entries of this confusion matrix. Similarly, we could ask, what is the probability of rejecting a woman if she is qualified? What about a man? And false negative rate balance requires that these probabilities be almost equal. Now, you may have heard about some of the controversy around the ProPublica investigation a couple of years ago, which showed that Compass, a widely used recidivism prediction tool, was, according to some metrics, racially biased. In their audit of the Compass system, ProPublica considered some metrics, which basically boil down to false positive rate balance and false negative rate balance, which I just showed you. In other words, they asked whether Compass makes similar errors in terms of both type and quantity for black and white defendants, and indeed they found that it does not. Because of this, they said the system was racially biased. In response, Northpoint, the company behind Compass, argued that Compass does satisfy predictive parity, and so therefore it's fair. There was a lot of back and forth between people about this, and about why the system didn't satisfy all of these metrics. However, the situation here is more complicated than it might appear on the surface. It turns out that it's actually mathematically impossible for a system to simultaneously satisfy these three properties at once: predictive parity, false positive rate balance, and false negative rate balance. Any system that satisfies two out of three of these properties necessarily must fail to satisfy the third. I won't go into more detail, but the takeaway here is that there are always going to be trade-offs that we need to consider when thinking about fairness, and we should choose our metrics carefully with these various trade-offs in mind. Moving on to deployment, the most common issue here is that the deployment population is somehow different from the population that you assumed that you would have. That is, your deployment population is different from the population from which your training and test data were generated, or the population you had in mind when you were defining your model. So a common example here is collecting training data from people in one country and deploying a system in other parts of the world. There's actually some interesting research way back in 2011 that looked at available face recognition tools and showed that the location where a face recognition system was developed had significant impact on its performance on different populations. Specifically, systems were substantially more accurate on faces from the same geographical region that they were developed in. Finally, there's the feedback stage. And this is something that's discussed a lot in the context of predictive policing and hotspots. As we've already discussed, predictive policing systems operate under the assumption that more arrests in an area equals more crime. This can create a feedback loop or self-fulfilling prophecy. More officers are deployed to the neighborhoods where more crime is predicted. This leads to more arrests in these neighborhoods, which leads to higher crime being predicted and even more officers being deployed there. All right, so I've shown you how bias and unfairness can creep into AI systems. What can we do about it? Unfortunately, there's no silver bullet or one-size-fits-all solution to bias, but there are strategies that we can take to mitigate possible harms. First and foremost, fairness needs to be prioritized at every stage of the machine learning pipeline. We simply cannot hope to address the problem if it's not. Second, we must think critically about the implicit assumptions that we're making at each stage. How might the model that we choose introduce bias? What about the metrics that we use to train the system? Third, we should pay special attention to potential biases in the data source and data preparation process, since we've seen so many of the biases in machine learning systems are introduced through the data, This has been a point that I've heard several times this morning. The data is really what matters here. Next, we should ensure that the population whose data is used for training matches the population where the system will be deployed. We should involve diverse stakeholders in discussions at every stage of the pipeline and gather multiple perspectives. Diverse teams have an advantage here, and this is something that we should consider in hiring as well. And finally, we should acknowledge our mistakes and learn from them. When it comes to bias and fairness, perfection is not possible. So we need to be willing to learn when we make a mistake and do better next time. Okay, for the last few minutes of my talk, I want to move on from fairness and talk about transparency and its relationship to intelligibility. Within policy circles, it's common for people to use the term transparency in two somewhat different ways. First, it represents the idea that people should be able to understand and monitor how AI systems work. Second, it's used to suggest that those who deploy AI systems should be honest and forthcoming about how and when AI is being used. In machine learning circles, the first idea is usually referred to as intelligibility or interpretability. And one important thing to realize here is that literal transparency, that is, providing information about model internals, can actually work against it. In particular, one way of being transparent would be to expose the source code used to train a machine learning model. However, the source code really would not tell us much about why an AI system behaves the way that it does, especially if we don't have access to the training data or model parameters. If I just tell you that my source code is optimizing a linear model, this doesn't give me a lot of insight into how the model works. Another form of transparency might involve exposing the internals of a model, such as the learned parameters or weights. However, several research studies, including a recent study that I ran with colleagues at Microsoft, show that, at least in some situations, exposing model internals can overwhelm people with information and actually make them less likely to notice instances where a model's making a mistake. In our study, we found that this information overload effect could happen even with a simple linear model with only two features in it. Okay, so I would argue that in most cases, it's intelligibility and not literal transparency that we want. To give you a few examples of why we might need intelligibility in an AI system, suppose we have an applicant who wants to know why she was denied a loan. In this case, intelligibility helps with accountability, allowing consumers to understand why a system is treating them in a certain way. Suppose instead we have a model that's deployed in a school that predicts that a student is likely to drop out. Knowing which factors are relevant for this prediction could help his teacher decide whether to believe the prediction and how to best intervene. In this example, intelligibility can lead to greater trust in a system's predictions. Third, suppose we have a model that matches candidates to jobs. By understanding characteristics of the training data, an employer may see that female candidates are underrepresented, leading to some potential bias. This is an example about the assessment of bias and relates back to the first half of my talk. I want to point out that in this example, intelligibility is coming from understanding the training data rather than understanding the machine learning model or the full AI system. As with fairness, we can think about intelligibility in different parts of the machine learning pipeline like this. Finally, suppose a data scientist sees an unexpected prediction from a model that she's trained. Knowing why this prediction was made could help her debug the model. In this example, intelligibility leads to greater robustness in the system. Now that I've argued for intelligibility, let me mention a few different approaches that have been proposed in the literature. One approach is to design and deploy models that are intuitively simple. Simple might mean something like a small decision tree or sparse linear model. For example, my colleague and collaborator Dan Goldstein has some nice recent work on simple point systems that assign scores based on a small number of features, resulting in models that can be easily understood and even memorized. Of course, as I hinted at several slides back, simplicity doesn't always lead to intelligibility. And in some cases, simplicity is just not possible. For example, when designing an AI system for a highly complex task like web search, or when the goal is to provide intelligibility for an existing complex system rather than starting over from scratch. Because of this, a second common approach is to design simple post hoc explanations for potentially complex models or systems. One thread of research in this discussion, in this direction, looks at how to explain individual predictions by learning simple local approximations of a model around a point. Another focuses on learning simple approximations of a full model. These approaches can be useful, though there's a danger here that simple explanations they provide may not be perfectly capturing what the true complex system is doing, and may therefore be misleading if we take them too seriously. Given the importance of the data used to train a model, we may also be interested in providing intelligibility around the data source. In the world of electronics, every component, ranging from the simplest resistor all the way up to the most complex microprocessor, has a corresponding data sheet that details the operating characteristics, test results, recommended usage, and other information about that component. Inspired by data sheets for electronic components, some colleagues of mine and I put forth a proposal that data sets, models, and APIs be accompanied by a data sheet that documents their creation, intended uses, limitations, and so on. To help teams construct data sheets for their own data sets, we've put together a set of questions that cover different types of information that we think belong in a data sheet. These questions are divided into categories listed here: motivation, composition, the data collection process, pre-processing, distribution, maintenance, legal concerns, and ethical considerations. Each category has about 5 to 10 questions. There are several possible use cases for data sheets. First, they could be posted alongside public data sets to inform potential users about the makeup and origin of the data. Second, they could be included with a company's internal use data sets to provide information to future internal users. This is something that we're starting to pilot on a small scale within Microsoft in the near future. Just as with fairness, none of these approaches are a silver bullet that will solve every need. The right approach to intelligibility is always going to depend on the context. The approach that works best for a CEO making a strategic decision is likely to be very different from the approach that works best for a regulator who wants to understand why an individual was denied a loan. There are therefore a number of questions that people should ask when trying to decide on a method of achieving intelligibility. We've already touched on a few of these. Why is the explanation needed, or what's the goal of the explanation? Do we need to explain a single prediction or a whole system? What is it that we want to understand here? Or who is it that we want to understand a system? But there are a whole host of other questions that go into determining which solution is right for a particular scenario, and understanding the space is an active area of research that a lot of people are working on, including myself. So in my last minute, I'd like to conclude by reviewing a few key points that I hope you'll remember after you walk away from this talk. First, as I've tried to stress throughout this talk, there's no one-size-fits-all solution to fairness, transparency, or intelligibility. Second, fairness, transparency, and intelligibility cannot be treated as afterthoughts. These principles must be considered at every stage of the machine learning pipeline, right from the very beginning. Third, there are countless opportunities for technology to play a role in the solution. I mentioned a variety of intelligibility methods that we're starting to explore, and there's a lot of active research going on in fairness, too, around algorithmic solutions. We just need to use the technology with care and also understand its limitations. Fourth, it's important to involve diverse stakeholders and gather multiple perspectives. These diverse stakeholders are likely to notice our own blind spots that we might miss. And finally, since there's no perfect solution to fairness or bias or intelligibility, we're all going to make mistakes in this process. The way forward is to acknowledge these mistakes and learn from them so that we can build better AI systems that benefit all. Thanks.